The following audio was recorded at the Pacific School Leadership Institute, which was held at Waits Lake Bible Camp near Valley, Washington, on October 19 and 20, 2023.
Okay, welcome to this session on supporting purity in our schools. On your pamphlet, incidents of sexual misconduct and allegations are rising in our schools. How can we proactively support the personal purity of our teachers and the innocence of our students? And I would appreciate your input. I've got a number of things to share, suggestions, possible guidelines, and so on. But there's always a lot more out there, some of your experiences, things that you've learned or things that have been helpful for you. I would appreciate your input on that. I wasn't aware of the topic last year, and so what I give as an introduction may kind of repeat some of what was said there. There's a website called themaplist.org, and MAP stands for Mennonite Abuse Prevention, that lists Anabaptist church and school leaders who've been accused of sexual misconduct or abuse. And it's a long list. It includes conservative and liberal groups. The large majority would come from MCUSA, the Mainline Mennonite Church, but there's quite a few conservative names on that list, too. It does not distinguish between recent and long-ago accusations. It does, according to the website at least, attempt to have solid, supportable evidence. And here's what they say. We publish cases when we have documentation showing credible or proven allegations as determined by a professional third party, prioritizing cases brought to us by victims, witnesses, or whistleblowers. And I guess we could call it a hall of shame. I'm not sure what all the motivation is behind it. I think most of the people on the who run the website would be ex-Mennonites, and so you can kind of gather maybe at least a little bit of the motivation there, but the problem is there are names on there, and those names got there for a reason, and so I don't think we can point the finger at people reporting it if what is there is true. Thinking about those conservative Mennonites on the list, if you go on there, you'll find some names that you recognize, probably. And their usefulness to the conservative Anabaptist community has been seriously compromised by sins that were committed, in some cases many years ago, and yet there was damage done there. And, of course, that doesn't cover the damage done to wives and children, other family members, and especially not to those who have been victimized because of that behavior. And I think there are probably many others whose names are not on that list, and yet they're guilty of similar sins. I think a lot of situations end up getting swept under the rug because of the possible negative publicity. And I have to wonder how many people have left conservative Anabaptist groups in disgust because they know of things like that happening. And in essence, they're throwing out the baby with the bathwater. They see corruption, and therefore they decide that a conservative Anabaptist group is not what I'm interested in if that's what they're like. And so I think we as conservative Anabaptists bear some responsibility there, and yet people do make their own decisions. So how do we handle such situations? How do we prevent new situations arising? The blurb specifically asks can we proactively support the personal purity of our teachers and the innocence of our students? And so that's what I would like to focus on. There may be just a little bit at the end if we have time as far as how to handle difficult situations, but thinking primarily on prevention. There's three areas of relationship challenges that you see in a school. You have staff relating to other staff members, you have staff relating to students, and then you have students relating to each other. And there's potential problem areas in each of those sections. First of all, staff to staff, there's the potential for emotional entanglements. And that can happen regardless of the marital status. When you have people working together and facing challenges together, it's very easy to cross lines from a professional relationship to personal. And so that can be an entanglement there. For two single persons, there's the challenge of, is a dating relationship okay when we work together in the school? And I found it interesting, Faith Builders refuses to allow dating couples to attend together. They may not be dating when they come. They may not start a relationship when they're there, if they're together in school there. And so I found that interesting. And then there's also issues of favoritism and conflicts of interest between staff members that may not be directly related to what we're talking about today, but again, that can be a problem area from staff to staff relationships. And then from staff to student relationships, one thing that can be very tricky and very damaging, and that is romances. And sometimes you have a male teacher end up marrying a female student, or you may have a male student marrying his female teacher. Things like that happen, but they should take place outside of the context of school. One thing that we need to keep in mind is that when there's a romance between a staff member and a student, that is by definition considered sexual harassment. Because you have a person who is in a position of authority building a romantic relationship with someone who is under them. And secular government takes a very dim view of that, and I think we need to be very careful about that as well. And of course, then you have issues of inappropriate touching or worse in a staff-to-student relationship. That's probably one of the biggest things that you see when someone who has been teaching, maybe teaching for a long time, falls because of that. And then other compromising situations where maybe nothing sinful happened, but it just doesn't smell well, good, and it doesn't leave a good testimony. And then from staff to student relationship, there's also false accusations possible, where the staff member was entirely honorable, but charges were brought by a student that caused a lot of issues. Okay, the last area of relationship challenges is student to student, and we have language issues. We have dirty jokes to deal with. We have inappropriate discussions. And it seems like, especially depending on a student's background and how loose their family is, some of those things can crop up pretty quickly in school. And then, of course, there's issues of student touching, groping, and worse. Another thing that can cause a lot of trouble is boy-girl relationships. And we'll talk about that a little bit more as we come through the list here. And there's also students bringing baggage from issues outside the school, whether it's abuse by relatives, whether it's adoptive or foster home situations. There's just a lot of ways that circumstances surrounding a child bring challenges into the schoolroom. Okay, looking at the three areas, staff to staff, staff to student, and student to student, anyone have any comments or questions or thoughts before we go into more specific ways of preventing bad situations? Okay, thinking about staff-to-staff relationships, and I alluded to some of these already, one is it is important to always be professional in relationships. That may deal with morality issues, but it also deals with other issues. And one thing I have listed here, and it may not be directly connected with morality issues, but avoiding favoritism. And especially if someone's in an administrative position, it's easier to connect to some other staff members, to some staff members than to others. You may have the ones who are always diligent and keeping up their end. You have the ones who are, quite frankly, whiners. You may have needy ones who just really rely on you for advice, which may be good, but there's also some pitfalls there. Avoid favoritism, and especially hashing one staff member with others. You soon have very lopsided relationships there if that happens. So professional relationships are extremely important in staff-to-staff relationships. And along with that, thinking about having personal discussions. Sometimes, well, teachers have their own personal needs. And if there are needs like that, they're best discussed as a group. Maybe a teacher has their own home life issues that they're working through, and they feel comfortable asking for prayer from the group, that would be fine. But especially if you have a needy female teacher and you are a male, it's very important to be very careful about that. And a wife may be very valuable in handling some of that, helping female coworkers who have emotional and similar needs. Again, I think it's very important not to have dating relationships in the school. Now, there may be possible exceptions. Maybe a short-term sub comes in and that person is dating someone who is one of the staff members. Maybe there's someone who comes in on a part-time basis, a little bit of volunteer work here and there. I guess I would see that a little bit different, but you have teachers who learn to know each other. They're interested in dating. They need to wait until school's out before that starts. I just feel it's much healthier that way. I think it's important to have open doors, even in teacher-to-teacher conversations, discussions, and so on, whether you're talking with someone in their classroom, whether it's in an office. Some classrooms have doors with windows, which is good. If there aren't doors with windows, then those doors really need to be open when you're having conversations with other staff members. And another thing I think is good to be aware of, and that is personal space. Now, young children don't have much sense of personal space, but once they get to be adults and they're teachers, we're very much aware of that. And you probably know people who you feel just a little uncomfortable talking to them because it feels like you need to keep backing away from them. And they may be very innocent as to what's happening, but I'm not talking about personal space of 3 or 4 feet. I think 10 feet or even 15 feet is sometimes very appropriate. If I go into a classroom, I'm principal at the school we're at. I'm there part-time. If I go into a classroom to speak to one of the sisters, she may be behind her desk, and I'll just plop down on a desk several rows back. And there's plenty of space. We can easily hear each other. We can talk together. But it is just there's some, I don't know if subliminal is quite the right term or not, but there's kind of an unspoken thing there that, you know, you're not going to get real emotional if you got that kind of space between you. Okay, I didn't have a lot of pointers for staff to staff. I'm ready to go to staff to student. But what are your experiences or suggestions or anything that you would like to share in the staff-to-staff relationship?
What should you do if you feel you are teaching and you're attracted to one of the other sister teachers? What should you do about it? Or should you do nothing about it?
Okay.
You said wait until after school starts, but is there something else you should do possibly?
Okay. What are your thoughts?
Yeah.
Well, I know of two situations like that, and I was one of them. I was teaching with a girl, and I did not end up marrying her, but I told her that I was kind of interested in having a relationship with her, but I didn't feel like anything should happen until after school was out. And she said, well, she was kind of interested too. And so I feel like we were quite discreet the rest of the school year, but we didn't start dating until after school was out. And then just a few years ago, I was principal at a school, and we had a young fellow come in to teach, and he essentially did the same thing. Now, when he talked to her, this was in, January or February, he didn't get an answer back for a couple months whether she was actually interested or not. But again, they did wait. I think it was the last day of school they announced that they were dating. Okay. If none of the other staff members guess it, that's a pretty good sign that they did a good job, but that doesn't always happen. Okay, let's move on to staff to student. When is this session supposed to end?
Two oh five is break.
Okay, I just want to make sure we keep on track, but don't race through things too much. Okay, I've got a whole row of things here for staff to student relationships. So maybe I'll just go through a few of them and pause and see if you have any suggestions or comments on what I've given. We'll go through some more. And then when I get to the end of that list, if you think of other things, then we want to make sure that we hear from you. The first thing I have is for staff to student. This is for the school board. Do your homework when you hire teachers. If a teacher left another school, I would find out why they left. Get references from the school board or whatever. If there's any question as to things don't look quite right here, find out before. This is all about being proactive, and so I think it starts with the hiring. I think for staff members, and I'm speaking, by the way, from a teacher, partly from a principal standpoint, so if you're board members, maybe this is the type of thing where, you know, this would be good for our students to know if you're not directly involved. But for staff members, I think it's attitude is of primary importance. And, of course, the first thing would be to cultivate purity of mind and eye personally. If you don't have that, everything else is going to be a struggle. So the personal purity is the first thing that needs to be taken care of. And then I think it's very important for staff members to look at students as real people. And these are adults who are simply going through a childhood stage, if that makes sense to you. I'm working with fathers and mothers. They just haven't got there yet. And so think of them, how am I going to relate to them? How am I going to behave toward them, knowing at some point they are going to be my peers? And what kind of memories will they have of that? It appears that sexual predators, probably their biggest motivation is actually power and control rather than physical drives. It's just someone is vulnerable, and so I want to control that. And so I think our view of students is extremely important. And then the goal, and I've thought about that different times in my school years, my goal was to make students feel safe around me at all times. Where, and especially thinking of girls, that they are comfortable knowing that I'm not going to cross any lines, I'm not going to make them uncomfortable, at least I'll do everything possible not to do that. Now, safe and comfortable aren't always the same. If we're having a session, last year I had three girls on the carpet for passing notes, and I don't think they were at all comfortable by the time I was done with them. But I hope they felt safe. I think they did. You get the difference between those two things there. So make sure that they feel safe, and then that kind of gives a guideline as you go through things, how you behave toward them and deal with different situations. One thing I think is important is to honor personal space. I mentioned that small children seem to have no sense of personal space, but not just adults, but when you're getting into older students, they sense that. And frankly, being in a classroom with children or young folks, personal space definitions are a little different than they are when you're talking to another adult, because you have to go to a desk to help them. And if your classroom is a type where they're arranged in offices, you know, where they got dividers, and you kind of have to get your head down there in the office with them to look at the problem or to work at something with them, it makes a difference how you handle that. And one thing I try to do, I would tell my students, okay, when I'm helping you, I'm getting in your personal space, and there's not much we can do about that, but you would really help me out if you scooted to the left when I come and answer your flag, and I'll give you as much space as I can. And then often you can pick the book up. If you're checking something, you can pick it up and do it so you're not right down beside them. But if they know you're aware of that and that you still respect them and you're going to give them all the space that you can. I think it's very important to respect girls' personal property. That's where female staff come in. Say there was significant note passing taking place and you think there's some purses involved, get a female co-teacher to do the inspecting for you. That way the girls feel respect and at the same time they know they're not getting away with anything. I think that's important. Okay, thoughts so far? All right, let's move on. I think it's very important to have clear, at least personal, or possibly even staff-wide guidelines for touching. When you have small children, touch is often a good thing, especially if you have a female teacher. The upper back, the shoulder, the hand, that's usually very appropriate. And again, if it's a female teacher, for them to do that. When you get to older students, it's usually pretty much nothing. My policy is basically I never touch anyone. Now, we were setting up for pictures, and I'd take a first grader and shift them a little bit by the shoulder or something like that. You know, that's one thing. But in the regular course of events, no touching at all. And along with that, I think it's important to be cautious in tag type of games. Again, that's very common for younger students, not as common for older students. But you open yourself up for collisions and trying to swipe someone, and it can be messy. So be very cautious if you're in a situation like that. And if you are playing and you spin around and you collide full body on with someone else, what do you do? Well, usually just a quick apology and then pretend it never happened, unless there's an actual injury. I do remember one time I was playing home plate, and there was a girl running for home, and somehow in the course of the event, she ran right into my arms. Well, that's awkward. So I said, sorry, and then moved on and acted as if it never happened. And just that type of thing to try to keep things as comfortable as possible. And along with that, I think it's important to have clear guidelines for physical discipline, especially thinking of spanking. It's essential to have witnesses. And I think you need to have witnesses regardless of what age a student is. Even if it's a kindergartner or a first grader, there should be a witness there. And I don't think cross-gender spanking is appropriate. It's never appropriate for a male staff member to spank a girl, even if it is a very young girl. Now, is it occasionally appropriate for a female teacher to spank a very young boy? I think that may be a little bit different. But I think generally it should be the same gender administering the spanking and having another staff member there to be a witness to that. And I think it's good for a school to have a policy as to what constitutes a spanking, how many whacks, just so that everything is above board there. Okay, thoughts, comments, experiences? All right, let's move on. I mentioned open doors in relation with staff members. That is also very important with students. Or at least if the door is closed, I've had closed door conferences with a student in trouble, but there's always another person in there with me. Maybe it was a child's teacher and it got escalated to the principal. There was another witness there. So even if it seems like a safe situation, don't assume that it's going to be that way. And I think it's important to be especially cautious with students who come from unhealthy home situations. You don't know their background. You don't know for sure what kind of abuse they may have faced. And some students seem just entirely too aware for their age. You just get this vibe. And then it's especially important to have witnesses there, because if you get accused falsely of something, you really want to have that witness there to back up your account of the story. So be especially aware of that. I think it's important for a school to have dress codes and to enforce them. And generally, if there is a modesty issue, a person of the same gender is the appropriate one to address that with a student. And one thing I think has been a real blessing, I don't know what your experience has been, it seems in the last 10, 15, 20 years, leggings have become very common for young girls. And that just saves a lot of grief. I mean, girls can run around like Indians sometimes, depending on what's happening. Our school has a field day, and they're jumping hurdles and racing and stuff like that, and it's a real blessing. I think it's important also for teachers to have appropriate reading material, especially like for oral reading, whether it's story time or whatever it is. And if you are the type where you like to have a story, but you prefer to have someone else do the reading for you, and so you get an audiobook, that may not be a problem, but remember, there's no filtering in audiobooks. You might be reading a story, and here's a questionable word, and you just skip over it. Or maybe here's a situation, and I don't know if I want to read that out loud, and so you just kind of pass over it. You've got that option if you're reading, but if it's coming across on an audiobook, there's no filtering there. Another thing I think, maybe this doesn't need to be said, but some scriptural passages are just kind of awkward to read in school, whether it's references from the Song of Solomon, whether there's some anatomical terminology that in our advanced modern age we're just not quite as comfortable with as the Bible writers were, whether there's accounts of immorality or molestation or that type of thing, I think it's important to use discretion there. And sometimes you're reading a passage and then there's some terminology there that you're better off just summarizing the rest of the passage rather than reading it out loud. And along with terminology, I think it's important to use the terminology that we use in when we talk to the students, whether it's in a class or whatever. I'll just tell this on myself. I taught for 10 years, and then I was off for 16, and then went back into the classroom, and that's been off and on ever since then. But I remember the first year that I came back, I'd been living in the adult world, and I thought, I'll just be matter-of-fact about things. And I made some comment using the term rape in connection with Amnon and Tamar. And one of the 10th grade girls just really jolted. She visibly jolted at my using that term. I thought, oh, you know what? I could have used a much more discreet term that would have been more comfortable for them to hear. And so terminology as far as sex and rape and some of those things, we understand what they are as adults, and they're fine for us to use depending what we're talking about, but we may want to be a little careful how we use it with students. I remember another awkward situation I got myself into, and I'm not quite sure how I would have gotten out of it, but we had biology class. And there was a discussion on the reproduction of pigs. Well, pigs are not that much different from humans as far as their reproductive systems, and I was describing that. And I could tell the children were kind of getting a kick out of the fact that I was embarrassed to talk about it. And I'm not sure how I would have done it differently. And of course, if you do any kind of dissection and so on, you get into those types of things as well. And so it's good to at least think ahead about how am I going to say this, how am I going to put this, so it's comfortable for people. I think it's important to be discreet and professional when you have medical issues and injuries. I think it's good, somebody slams into the wall and breaks an arm, or worse yet, a leg or something, and, you want to make sure that they're okay and so on. Well, think about how you're going to handle that if that situation comes up. And there's where a same-gender teacher is best to, if any inspection needs to be done, to make sure that gets taken care of appropriately. And then you have the issue of field trips and outings. And I think things can often go wrong about as quickly there as any place. It's a more fluid situation. You don't have the structure that you have right at school. I think it's important to be very careful to supervise. Make sure that students are supervised. I think it's good to warn students to be alert, and especially in relation to public restrooms, with all the gender issues going on and people identifying as being a gender that they anatomically are not, maybe those incidents are somewhat rare, but I think they're going up in as far as how often things like that happen. So make sure that your students know to be careful there. I think it's good to have conversations about safety, either then or if a situation arises in the classroom. I remember some of my high school students saying, what should I do if I get attacked, say, in a big city or something? Well, thankfully, I had done a little bit of reading, and I told them, well, make absolutely as much noise as you possibly can. Just scream your lungs out if you need to. And don't hesitate to do that if something just isn't right or someone tries to lay a hand on you or whatever. And another thing is good for children to realize, especially very young children, if you get separated from a group, find a woman. Because the odds are very, very strong that a woman will be safe. A man may well be safe, most of them are, but the odds are much stronger that a woman will be safe if you need to find someone and say, I'm lost, I need help. Another thing I found out, and didn't really think about it, is students need to learn to be wary of public school students in the same museum or taking the same factory tour or whatever. I remember having my high school students touring a Honda factory in Marysville, Ohio, and there was a set of public school students sitting in the same classroom, and there's a little bit of interaction between the public school students and my students, and at the end of that trip, I came to find out that some of the public school boys had spoken awfully to our girls. It was bad enough they even refused to tell me what was said, but they felt really bad about it, and I guess I hadn't even realized the potential there. Okay, I've done quite a bit of talking. My voice is kind of sounding like it, too. What thoughts do you have in relation of staff relating to students? Questions, comments, experiences? How many of you have taught school? Okay. Anything ever happen that would be useful for us to know?
I really appreciate what you shared. Some of those things you might think, well, you know, touching it, it doesn't really matter that much, but it's just way better to err on the side of safety.
I was blessed with a good school board. I remember one instance where a young lady, she was pretty emotionally going through a lot of things, and after school there, in the midst of everything going on, she started to tell me about some of these things in her life and stuff. I wasn't quite sure what to do, you know, just right there, it was a very public, and one of the other students heard that, and went home and told their parents, who talked to the school board's wife, who went and talked to her, and problem solved. And I was just real blessed by that, for an attentive school board's wife who was ready to step into that.
If you find yourself on a school board, I don't think it hurts to talk about some of these things with teachers at the beginning of the year. Encourage them to be discreet. If you have specific guidelines, that's a good time to go over them. If you have a handbook, which I would strongly encourage, some of those things can be written in the handbook. Okay, let's move on to student-to-student relationships. I mentioned the supervision that they needed on field trips and outings. That supervision applies throughout school. It applies as soon as they get to school, even before classes start. It applies after school, at least until they leave the school property. I don't know where you draw the line as to when the school is responsible for a child and when the parents resume responsibility, but that should be fairly clear cut. And it applies during lunch, during breaks, and so on. I think that's probably the number one thing in preventing issues between students is making sure they're supervised. You have a child that needs to stay in at recess time. Well, if you're in here with the child, what's happening to your students out there? Or you have a couple children staying in and you go out with them, what are these two students doing? I think it's good, especially if you have multiple teachers, if you have multiple teachers that they can kind of cover for each other there, but make sure that they're supervised. I think it's important to have some restrictions on restrooms. The number of students that are allowed to be in a restroom at once should be limited. Typically, that would be like one per classroom, and hopefully that doesn't overlap just a whole lot. One thing when I came to the school that we're at in Holmes County, I thought was interesting. Students were not allowed to talk in the hallway and not allowed to talk in the restrooms at all. I thought, whoa, that's fairly strict. But you know what? That saves a lot of headaches. Because then if students are talking in the restroom, they're already breaking a rule, and you've got something to act on. You don't have to worry about what they're talking about. Just the fact that they were talking is enough right there. And so if they know they're not allowed to talk in restrooms, it can definitely prevent some of the conversations that can take place if they're not supervised. I think it's important to be upfront about forbidding boy-girl relationships. I remember back in the early years, one school I was teaching, it seemed like it was almost the accepted thing that if you were a certain age that you had a girlfriend. Not officially, but, you know, everybody understood that you're kind of paired up with a girl and so on. And I remember some students that I had real problems with. It seemed like they were interested in this person, and I would try to break it up. And then they'd go over to this other person, and it's like there was it was a no-win situation. And I think it's best to simply make it clear up front, first day of school, that there are no boy-girl relationships. We're here together. We're here to learn together. We're here to enjoy building friendships amongst each other as a group. And this is a time of life to be friends to all your classmates and to develop your own character, not to have the pressures of trying to decide who you're going to marry or of having boyfriend-girlfriend relationships. And along with that, then there's no tolerance whatsoever for any kind of boy-girl teasing. And believe me, a home culture can really reinforce that or can really undermine it. And unfortunately, as teachers and even as board members, we can't control home cultures, but we can do our best to control what happens at school. I think it's also important to have no tolerance for any kind of bad language or any kind of questionable or dirty jokes. And that's one thing where good staff communication is extremely valuable. For quite a few years, I was principal and upper grade teacher. Another brother taught in the classroom below me. And there's different times when he would come to me and say, I overheard these boys talking, and I thought you might want to know about that. Because one teacher just can't hear and see what all goes on. And so the good relationships between staff members and communication when there are issues, not being afraid to share what we heard and acting on that. In fact, last year I remember I think it was a first grade teacher came to me, or a kindergarten teacher came to me and said, I think you had some girls throwing water in the restroom. And I said, oh, really? Yeah. She said, because her student got wet, this little girl walked in, these older girls were throwing water in the restroom, and she came back and complained to her teacher that she got wet in the restroom because some of the big girls were throwing water. Well, okay, she told me so I could act on that, and we had some very sheepish older girls after I got done. I think it's also good to have good staff-to-student relationships, and again, there's an awareness of what is going on. When you have a relationship, your students, they know their boundaries, they respect you, and yet there's a friendly relationship there. Then it helps to keep track of what's happening. Okay, thoughts on student-to-student relationships, thoughts or experiences?
One thing that I learned was that, at least I'm not, maybe it's not that way with other men, but sometimes we have to, girl teachers will pick up on things a lot quicker than what we men teachers will. And there might be some things going on between a guy and a girl that I just had no clue. But one of my co-teachers noticed that, you know, and maybe that's something we need to ask them sometime. They can help us to watch out for those things.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. A lot of things that I'm very clueless at, but I've got a good staff to help pick up on those things. Oh, we're almost out of time. A few more things I'd like to mention here. I think there are responsibilities that the school has to students also. And thinking along the line of content safeguards, I think it's very important to restrict student phones. If they bring phones to school, they must be kept in a teacher's care until they leave again. I remember one time I had students reporting to me that one of the boys snuck a phone into school and was showing YouTube videos to some of his friends. Well, that definitely is something that needs to be addressed. I think internet access, if your school does have internet access, it should be filtered carefully and monitored. Better yet, just not have it for students. Even if teachers need it, I think it would be best if it was made totally inaccessible for students. And along with that, I think it's good to have computers in public areas. And the strong preference is that the screens are facing into the main part of the room, or better yet, facing the door, so that anyone who walks in can, there's accountability there. And of course, there's the age-old issue of censoring encyclopedias and other books, and that goes long before our time. Some people get very ambitious. I remember we had books in the school library once that the word circus was blacked out, and I thought maybe that was stretching it a little bit. And there is some intelligent application of censoring. If you cover an objectionable picture with black tape, what are your students going to do? It's best to cut it out entirely or even to remove the entire page. And if you take a black marker over an inappropriate word, what will your students do? They'll hold it up to the light and see if they can figure out what it is. I remember one, I think it was a school meeting or something I was at, where they suggested that if there's an inappropriate word, draw one line through it. That way students recognize it's inappropriate. They don't waste time trying to figure out what it is. Now, if it's so inappropriate they shouldn't see it, then probably the book shouldn't be there to start with. But there's, I don't know if you call it milder swear words or slang words or words that are borderline, that might be a good idea there. Okay, we are out of time. I guess we're supposed to be having break. Any final comments yet? Okay. You're asking for suggestions as to how to...
I'm not teaching anymore, but just whatever you want to get. So, yeah.
I guess one thing I would suggest is to be upfront about it. Tell the whole class, look, we've only got one girl here. Let's make her feel at home. One year I taught, I had 12 girls and one boy. And we were upfront about it. Hey, it's you and me against all these girls. And he handled it quite well. And I think we had an enjoyable year. But just being upfront about it and encouraging them to include each other in games and that type of thing, I think is good.
It did make it easier for the one of my sisters.
Okay. Okay, anything else? All right, I believe it's break time, so you're dismissed.